You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.
And welcome, everybody, as you always are, here on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen, every Tuesday at 12 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, and of course, 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and wherever you are around the world listening and viewing, welcome, everybody. Nice to have you here. As always, I have an amazing guest. He's an inspiring teacher, has formed amazing groups to help people and improve your consciousness, has written some wonderful books before, which we'll talk about as well. And also, we're talking about his latest book. And there it is right alongside of him. You can see his good-looking face. Leonard Perlmutter. There it is. Your conscience. You know, we like to talk about your conscience a lot here on the couch and how you can improve your thoughts, meditation techniques, and basically make your life more directed, more peaceful, stable, and happier. And that's what I'm all about. And he's shaking his head. Yes. Welcome to the show, Leonard. So nice to have you with us.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for the invitation.
My pleasure. So we're talking basically about changing up what we've been going through most of our lives and understanding how to deal with a lot of struggles, illness, depression, which I focus on working with every day with patients, but the misery, the suffering, especially with this COVID thing going around and the financial struggles, addiction we're all having, you know, to certain things. And I say that not only in terms of substances, but addiction in terms of negative behaviors that we continue to perpetuate throughout our lives. And this is a brilliant book, by the way. I've read it, and Leonard shows you how to give your conscience control in your life so that all your decisions support and guide you to act for your highest good. And that leads to a life of joy, love, peace, and both personal and professional success. And you're going to learn a little bit about that today from my special guest, Leonard. And let's just get to the root of things so people can understand what is your concept of conscience?
Well, conscience is one of the four major functions of the mind. It has a quiet voice. It's not loud. It's not pushy. But it is the only function of the mind that can discriminate, determine, judge, and decide. And that's very profound when we realize that, because what it means is that every single choice we have ever made and every single choice we will ever make has been and will be made by the conscience, because the conscience is the only function of the mind that can decide. The other three functions, although they're loud and pushy and insistent, can only advise.
So what are those other three functions, Len?
The other three are the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind.
All right.
So the ego is very interesting because the ego is hardwired to the reptilian brain.
Yes.
And is in service to the reptilian brain. And what does that mean on a practical level for us? Well, the ego, like the reptilian brain, is heavily invested in our self-preservation.
Right. Right.
The ego, like the reptilian brain, does not want to die.
Right.
The challenge for us is that both the ego and the unconscious mind very often see change as a death to their identity.
Right, right.
And that makes things very challenging for us.
Yes, it does.
So I always imagine that the ego walks around with a chainsaw. And whenever the ego is engaged in a relationship, the ego always splits the relationship in half and would say, oh, this portion here, this is pleasant. I define this as good.
Right.
So let's reprise it.
Right, right.
And over here, this portion, this is very unpleasant. I believe this is bad and we should avoid it at all costs.
Yeah.
However, we already know, we know that things that are said to be good aren't always good for us.
Right.
And things that are unpleasant aren't always bad for us.
True.
So yeah. What happens is we sort of get caught. We become habituated to things I like and things I don't like. Mm-hmm. And when that occurs, that mental inflexibility inevitably leads to physical inflexibility.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that means the body's in pain.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's not helpful for any relationship.
Well, that's right. Exactly. Yeah. So, like you said, the reason why it is so hard for us to follow our own advice, our conscience, is because of all these other things going on, and the ego and the subconscious, and you know, and what is the other fourth part you were talking about? Five senses and logic, right? Yeah.
So the senses and logic are constantly asking the question, should I do it?
Yeah.
Or should I not do it?
Yeah.
Should I say it or should I not say it? Should I think it or should I not think it? And what's really interesting to me is that the mind is continuously projecting our creative energy through the eyes and the nostrils and the mouth and the ears and the hands and the feet.
Yes.
In hopes that we're going to find some object and some relationship in the world that's going to make me happy, that's going to make me secure, that's going to make me healthy. And so we know that we waste a lot of creative energy chasing these rainbows.
Right.
And yet, once our creative energy is extruded, it's virtually impossible to put it back to reuse. So it's a little bit analogous to having a tube of toothpaste. You squeeze a tube of toothpaste and out comes the toothpaste.
Right.
But have you ever tried to put the toothpaste back in the tube?
No.
Right? It's impossible.
Right.
Same with our creative energy. We need a lot of creative energy to fulfill the purpose of our lives. We need a lot of creative energy to fulfill all these duties and responsibilities that we have in life. Where are we going to get it?
Right.
And we waste so much. So that's the senses with our logic, and that's the ego, which is all about self-preservation. Thirdly is the unconscious or the subconscious.
Yes.
Which is the reservoir of all of our merits and demerits. In other words, everything that we deem essential to self-preservation.
Right.
And the challenge for us is that the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind only have limited perspectives.
Right, right.
They're not always wrong. Like,
correct. Yeah.
Like right now,
yeah,
we both need a healthy ego to carry on this conversation in an understandable manner.
Indeed, yeah.
Or if we want to drive our automobile or our truck,
sure.
We need a healthy ego.
Sure.
So the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind are always wrong. The challenge is that an awful lot of what they advise us is based on faulty concepts.
Yes.
We all have these faulty concepts that we have deposited and planted in our unconscious mind, and we got those, you know, from mom, from dad, from grandma, from grandpa, from kids we went to school with, our teachers, celebrities, politicians, the culture. And unconscious forces are a million times more powerful than even our good intentions.
Yes.
So you have these three amigos. You have the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind.
Yes.
They're often wrong, but never in doubt. They're loud. They're pushy. And you have the conscience, which is very interesting, but it has a very soft, whisper-like voice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So an awful lot of many times the ego senses and the unconscious mind are so loud and so pushy.
Yes.
The conscience cannot do what it does best.
Yes.
And that is, it acts as a mirror. It has the potential to act as a mirror. Mm-hmm. And when it acts as a mirror, the conscience can reflect perfect wisdom from the super conscious portion of the mind and reflect it, into our conscious mind so that we can use it.
Beautiful. Thank you, Leonard. And we're going to be talking about some of those techniques that Leonard discusses in his book. It's called Your Conscience. And it's the key to unlock limitless wisdom and creativity and solve all of life's challenges. By the way, I want to just add a little bit of information about my special guest today. Leonard is a heavy hitter. He's been around a long time creating and helping people. And Leonard Perlmutter is the founder and director of the American Meditation Institute in New York, of course. He's author of the best-selling The Heart and Science of Yoga. If you want to know anything about yoga, you got to pick that book up. It's amazing. Also, the originator of National Conscience Month. I love that. We got to extend that to being conscience, having conscience every day.
But in January, it's a start.
Woo! That's right. Exactly. Leonard also serves as the author and editor of Transformation. It's the Journal of Meditation and as Mind-Body Medicine. And of course, over the past 25 years, Leonard has served on the faculties of the New England Institute of Ayurvedic Medicine in Boston. And also, he's the International Himalayan Yoga Teachers Association in Calgary. Of course, that's in Canada as well, just to name a few. I just wanted to give you a taste out there of what Leonard is all about and what an influencer he is in this world and society. Now, you were talking a little bit about, you know, the higher consciousness we have, our higher consciousness. Is that what other people sometimes refer to as the higher inner self or our higher self? And do we have to have or believe in a God in order to be in touch with that higher self?
It is synonymous with the higher self, and we don't have to believe in God. Remember, words are just pointers.
Yes.
An attempt by one human being to communicate a concept to another human being.
Oh.
I've experienced something. Oh, well, what do you call it? Well, I call it this.
Yeah.
I call it that.
Right.
Well, it's the same thing.
Sure is, isn't it? Yeah. And everybody has their own unique experience, but you can only glimpse on similar experiences when you reach that higher state of consciousness and try to explain it to someone else. But if they haven't been there, it's really hard to get it, sometimes. Yeah. So let's talk about those thoughts. And you were talking about how to follow the conscience and those other four parts of our minds that get in the way. What is, you know, everybody talks about the law of karma and why are thoughts so important to it?
Well, I can't even raise my hand without first entertaining a thought.
Yeah.
The mind moves first.
Right.
The body simply follows. Mm-hmm. And so
absolutely.
That's where the power is. The
yes.
power is in our thoughts. We think that thoughts are equated with, pennies, not really worth anything. Oh, but that's wrong. Thoughts are our most powerful resource. And every thought is a packet of energy.
Mm.
That either can be expansive and creative or contractive and destroying us.
Yes. That which we think, that which our conscious is, we're putting out there into wherever you want to call it, the field or whatever that may be, as they've measured in science.
Yeah.
But that is a mirror, a giant mirror, and comes back to us. And hopefully, I think the goal here is to learn how to manage that ego and those other two parts. You know, of our mind, and
that's the ideal. That's the ideal,
and align it with, you know, of course our body will follow. You know, we need to align ourselves with that. So, you say that there are only two kinds of thoughts. You know, talking about how we think. What are those? And Can you describe them a
little? Well, the two types of thoughts are preya and shreya. They rhyme, and that's helpful to remember them.
Right.
Preya thoughts are some form of ego or sense gratification that conflicts with our conscience.
Right.
And the shreya are those thoughts that are always going to lead us for our highest and greatest good.
All right.
So how do we know which is which? Well, the ego senses an unconscious mind simply for the sake of a scientific experiment. If we can encourage them to support the conscience just to see what happens, then we can serve those thoughts that lead to fulfillment, and we can sacrifice those thoughts that don't lead to fulfillment, but which help to transform the inherent energy of emotions like fear and anger and greed. Oof. And when you sacrifice those emotions of fear, anger, and greed, which are not bad, they're just energy. And
right.
They're contractive, and in many cases they're poisoning. But if you sacrifice them,
right,
and let them go, they can automatically be transformed into three strategic reserves of healing energy, an increase in our willpower, and an expansion of our creative capacity.
Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. And, you know, I love the part, you know, where you were talking about there is no judgment per se. It's not bad. It's not good. It is, but it is what we do with our ego.
Yes.
It, like you said, it confirms our identity in many ways, and it is habitual. We are addicted to that chemistry, if you want to go science, you know, of letting those neural patterns continue to grow, of
right,
whatever ego-based,
uh-huh,
you know, thought patterns are. And I think something that I loved in your book as well is I put it like being aware of your thoughts, being aware of what you're thinking. Wait a minute. What energy are you putting out there now? Why? And, you know, as a psychologist, I'm always working with people in this particular realm is, why do I need to defend, or why am I putting this out there? What does my ego need to defend? That, why am I so angry? What do I need to say? Hey, I'm here. What's that about? And as you explained, a lot of our upbringing is really heavy and imprinting, and we need to overcome that.
So the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind, they rarely want to live in the present moment.
Right.
So much of
God
is spent in the past with memories, or in the future with our,
yes,
imagination.
Yes.
Rarely are we here now.
Uh-huh.
So I encourage people all the time, throughout the day, just remember, bring yesterday,
yes,
and tomorrow into today.
Yes.
Men bring today into now.
Yes.
And now ask your conscience what's to be done and what's not to be done, and try your best to encourage the ego, senses, and unconscious mind, for the sake of an experiment, to experience that which the conscience is reflecting from the superconscious portion of the mind. It's the same portion of the mind where,
yes,
I saw mathematical equations.
Right.
It's the same portion of the mind where Paul McCartney hears beautiful melodies. Where do you think these geniuses have received this wisdom? It's from the superconscious portion of the mind.
Right.
Reflected by the conscience.
Yes.
It doesn't mean I'm going to become a physicist, and it doesn't mean that any of you listening are going to become a songwriter. But if you use your conscience for the sake of an experiment, and you can coordinate the ego, senses, and unconscious mind to support that experiment, you will be able to receive wisdom that will positively enhance every single unique relationship that you have.
Oh, that's beautiful, Leonard. Thank you for that. Amazing.
Well, it's not me. Everybody that's a human being has this capacity.
We do.
So why not use it? Why stay within the matrix?
Yes.
Why not go outside the matrix
right.
to receive perfect wisdom and right. then bring it into the matrix to be used? Mm-hmm. It's like a transfusion.
Mm-hmm. How do you think we can apply that to the collective consciousness, tuning in, you know, with everyone else and spreading that I don't want to judge it or anything, but higher consciousness to others in the world?
Well, my experience is that if I can work on my mind, letting go of the obstacles that represent a large portion of my mental software, and in the midst of relationships, if I can sacrifice and transform the fear that I have stored, the anger, the selfish desires that I have formed, then I'm allowing this light of consciousness within my mind, within the field of action in which I participate, to grow. And consciousness is within each of us. So if I purify my instrument and allow consciousness to grow, it adds and changes the consciousness of the planet.
Yes. So true. Beautiful. That's right. That's putting out that energy.
That's the power of one. Do we have power? Absolutely we have power. But we choose not to do it because we live mostly, habitually, on this surface of consciousness, practically asleep, because we live in our habit patterns, many of which are faulty, and yet we expect different situations to take place.
So true.
We keep on going to the hardware store for milk. That's an oxymoron.
Well said. You know, some of the scientists over here in California at the Heart Math Institute in Palo Alto, you know, they talk about how 85 to 90% of our thoughts today are the same thoughts we had yesterday and the day before and the day before and all that. Yeah. And that's the habituation.
And how they're working for us.
Yeah. Right. So it's that consciousness that has been, you know, it's just right there. It's just trained. We're like puppies.
But we don't understand and appreciate the value of these thoughts because it's energy. Energy can't be created and destroyed, but it can be transformed.
Right.
We have to look at ourselves as scientists and engage in the re-engineering of our software by transforming the inherent energy of the mind.
Yes. So there's a lot of people out there who, you know, are streaming, of course, live with us, and they're reaching out to me on straighttalkdoc@gmail.com.
Good.
Some of the questions coming in.
Yeah.
And this is a common one, I'm sure you hear in your practice and your work, and you've answered in your other books before as well. It's, how can I deal with all the stressors that I have? I have a family and I just got laid off from my work. I'm feeling low self-esteem. And I'm also worried about getting sick and all of the world's problems going on. How can I calm my mind from these things?
Well, stress is not bad. Stress is just energy. It's stress is really an opportunity to make a mid-course correction. You know, stress is sort of like an alarm clock going off.
No.
It's there to wake us up, to alert us to the fact that, like our GPS, directional in the automobile, we need to what? Recalculate where we're headed.
Yeah.
We need to make a mid-course correction. So is that terrific telemetry? Is that great information that this superconscious wisdom reflected by the conscience is telling us that we need to do something different? Instead of serving the fear, sacrifice the fear, instead of serving the anger, sacrifice and transform the anger. So stress is not bad. And as far as self-esteem is concerned, I once had a very interesting conversation with a colleague that I respected greatly, actually in California. And I said to him, I have fallen in love with this philosophy and this science, but I'm self-employed. And I said to him, I have to deal with a lot of fear.
Sure.
Probably this philosophy and this science that I am now teaching is better suited for people who work for the government. They have a paycheck coming in every week. They get health insurance. They get a retirement plan, possibly with a pension. But I'm self-employed. I deal with fear. Do you have any advice for me? And he said something that was, it was a game changer for me.
What?
He said, Leonard, you consider yourself self-employed. That's your problem. He said, I'm employed by the self.
Ah.
And whoa, I understood exactly what he was saying. All I have to do is become an employee of the higher self.
Ah.
That's this perfect superconscious wisdom reflected by my conscience. I only have to be the instrument for this wisdom, and everything that flows from that through my thoughts, my words, and my actions will enable me to fulfill the purpose of my life without pain, without misery, and without bondage.
Yes.
But let me just say this, and I remind people of this all the time. I want nobody to believe me. Anything that I say, anything that I write, you should have your Doubting Thomas hat on and do a critical examination of what I profess. But if you're interested, even yes. though I'm not asking you to believe me, I will encourage you night and day to experiment for yourself. Yes. Turn your entire mind-body-sense complex into your own personal laboratory and experiment with using your conscience and see what you experience, see what the ego experiences, see what the senses experience, and see what the unconscious mind experiences. My experience, all of the above are very pleasantly surprised. And everything that we need just comes to us like a hot knife through butter.
Beautifully said. Isn't it amazing? I mean, you've been doing this for years, but isn't it amazing when things start popping, when you can get into this here and now daily, you know, practice, and you notice, and it's not, and it makes you want to be more humble even when you see, boom, boom, oh my God, I am powerful. Okay, I've got to watch my thoughts because, boy, these people and these energies and these things are coming to us once we fall back into those other three parts of our brain and our thought process and our ego needs and all of that. And it's like, whoa, how did I create this? Oh, that's right. I've been habituating my old negative patterns and putting out negative energy, if you want to be sort of mundane about describing.
Oh, but it's not even mine, you see. It's not even my faulty concepts. Oh, yeah. That was my father talking.
All right.
that was my grandfather talking.
Yeah.
So whose life am I living?
That's exactly right. You know, I hate it when my husband says to me, oh my God, you sound just like your mother. And I was like, oh, that scares me. But he's right.
Listen, here's my experience with that. Because mom and dad have taught us to the best of their ability. I believe that they really tried to teach us what to do in the world and also what not to do in the world. So the positive aspects, we like that. We criticize the negative. But they're trying the best that they can to teach us, hey, look, I can't do anything else right now in my life, so I'm driving this car off the cliff. Watch me and see how much pain it causes, and don't you do this. That's why I tell people that one of my best teachers in my life has been Elvis Presley.
I love it. Now tell me more. Tell me more.
Well, I fell in love with Elvis when I was 10.
Yeah.
And I loved him when I was 20 and 30 and 40 and 50. And I love him today. because I loved Elvis Presley, I gave him a tremendous amount of my attention. And because I gave him so much attention, I observed many of the actions that he took. And some of them, some important ones, were actually in conflict
with
my own conscience.
Mm-hmm.
So when he passed and people say, oh, wasn't that a shame? I said, for me, it was a blessing because he taught me in many respects that I don't have to touch every burner on the stove to know which are hot and which are not.
Yes.
And I'm eternally grateful.
Oh, yes. Absolutely. You know, he did, and hopefully a lot of other people really learned, you know, from his experiences as well.
Yes.
And who knows what people...
That's right.
What they're doing many times. And that's the thing, too, is we cannot project our own stuff onto other people.
But we do all the time.
Oh, yeah.
We do all the time.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's
we
not,
sure do.
It's not what's out there that causes us pain. It's what we think about it.
Mm-hmm. And what we, yeah.
Our concepts.
And what we're assuming that other people, based on our own issues, what we're assuming people are thinking about us or what their motivations are. And we cannot assume anything.
Right. Because everybody's living in a separate universe.
Yes. We can only tap into our intuition and approach that perhaps with non-judgment about other beings, right?
That's right. I believe that everybody's trying the best they can. It depends on how much
I agree.
The ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind maintain that hijacks our superconscious wisdom and the conscience.
Right.
For me, that's the conscience, even though it's deciding everything, is really tied up and lives inside a closet.
Yeah. That's a good way of putting it. It's really true. By the way, guys, in case you just tuned in here, you're on the couch with me, Dr. Michelle Cohen, and my special guest, Leonard Perlmutter. He's written a book. You see it right next to his head. It's amazing how you float things as well with your consciousness.
It's a practice I've tried for about 25 years, and I finally have elevated it.
You and Paramahansa Yogananda, you're elevating, material objects now. Your conscience, the key to unlock limitless wisdom and creativity and solve all of life's challenges. And that's just not jiving, folks. We're talking about our higher consciousness and how to do it and get with it. And we're going to be talking about some of those things. It's an elegant book. I love it because it's a really comfortable read. And most of my listeners will really get into the groove with this one, I think. Simple and life-changing guide to putting your conscience in the driver's seat. You all know how important that is and how we talk about it. But this is a really brilliant book and put very clearly as to how to be aware of being aware and improve your life a little bit. Come on, let's be in the now. Let's create the now. And by the way, another email came in on Straight Talk Doc here. And how do I get in touch? How do I get in touch with my here and now when there's always intrusions coming up and my brain is going 100 miles an hour?
Well, that's right. Most of our minds are going at 100 miles an hour in the passing lane. Now, let's face it. Sometimes we have to be in the passing lane. But to live in the passing lane is going to be painful.
Right.
So we have to slow down a little bit. We have to slow down and we have to learn not to be reactionaries, not to be reactionaries. So if somebody offers me poison, I don't feel any obligation to swallow it. Mm-hmm. Why do people feel obligated? All you have to do is say, no, thank you. I have no use for this.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
That's all.
Exactly. Who was it that said hate and anger towards others is like drinking poison and expecting others to die?
Right. Right. You know, it just poisons our entire physiology.
Yeah.
When we're driving to work and somebody cuts me off in traffic, and I have to slam on the brake to avoid an accident.
Sure, sure.
A cascade of anger comes forward from my unconscious mind, and I am having a conscious relationship with anger. So the only question for me is, what am I going to do with that energy? I can transform it. I can transform it into healing energy, willpower, and creativity simply by sacrificing it.
Yes.
Or I can continue poisoning myself by thinking about it and thinking about it and thinking about it.
Yes. Yes, my mantra when I'm driving, especially in Los Angeles, is someone cutting me off or people are street racing. You know, it's crazy here, of course. Is just allow, get away from me. Get away, please. Get as far away from me. I had to use my, you know, instincts and to slam on the brake and get out of your way, but allow your energy to go away so that I don't have to hold on to that as well, you know, and that's the thing.
That's right.
Just something that comes up all the time in my practice, and this is a personal question. How do we cope with people who are in our lives or sort of necessary family members in our lives, whether it be in-laws or siblings or our spouses from time to time or our children, our adult children? How do we... How do we stay without judging them? How on a continual basis, if their behavior, or they choose not to change and be aware of their own behavior, we're not responsible for them. We're responsible for us, right? But how can we live day in and day out with negative responses?
Well, we know that there's three kinds of relationships. Relationships that come for a reason, a season, or a lifetime, and family is lifetime relationship. And so for me, two things are critically important, have been in dealing with family, because family is very interesting. You know, these are the people, many of whom in our lives, who carry around these little remote control buttons like you have for the television.
Oh, sure, sure.
And they push our buttons. They push our remote
buttons. Yes, they do.
Buttons.
Yes, they do.
Mm-hmm. No. And so two things have been important to me. First and foremost is remembering who I am. Mm. I have a body. I have a mind. I am not the body, nor am I the mind. But within me is pure consciousness, wisdom, and bliss, having this human experience. So what I'm doing is I'm having the same situation, but I'm having a different experience because I'm changing my perspective. And if you change your perspective, you change your experience. If I am having a relationship with family through the limited perspective of the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind, which is generally the situation, I wind up in pain and I wind up causing pain.
Right.
But if I can observe this family from the far side of the moon, so to speak, from the center of consciousness, now my heart is filled with love and compassion. I understand the frailty of their mind.
Yes.
And I understand the frailties of my mind. Mm-hmm. And in such a case, if I can examine the obstacles that live in my mind and set them aside, if I can see the mind of the person with whom I have a relationship and see their obstacles of their mind and move those aside, then the only thing that is going to exist between us is love.
Yes.
The most ancient traveler.
Yes.
And to facilitate that, the most powerful mantra is a good sense of humor.
Oh boy, is it. I love that. Yeah. Shaking your head and going, oh, okay, that's all right. God bless them. That's their truth.
That's right. God bless you.
you know. And also, you know, again, in the psychology realm, we're always looking at, let's check out someone's backstory. Let's check out someone's messages and what they are all made up of. And that's not to assume that we know everything about them at all. We can't feel their feelings or understand what they're experiencing except by the language they speak. But you know, with our family and with our in-laws who are family, I guess, too. And relationships as well with friends and, you know, things that get kind of mucked up along the way sometimes, misunderstandings, etc.
That's why over 100 years ago, William Osler, who was one of the founders of Johns Hopkins, he made a statement that was very profound, very yogic. He said, don't ask what kind of disease the patient has. Ask what kind of patient has the disease.
Oh boy.
About the mind. It's all about the mind because all the body is in the mind.
Right, it is. And do you suppose, and I know about changing a lot of stuff within, we can create a healthier body, you know, by utilizing being aware in our meditations, and perhaps we could talk about some of that as well. But it is, my gosh, I think our fabulous Homo sapien creations, wherever they came from, you know, whatever they are, I think we are able to create and manifest health within us.
That's right.
By this and our awareness.
There's no question about it. We can, you know, and yoga is all about balance, right?
Which yes.
In medicine, it's that balance is called homeostasis. It's about eliminating conflict.
Remember, yes, it is.
That if my outer actions, thought, word, and deed are in conflict with my inner wisdom, the wisdom reflected by the conscience, that contraction in my mind becomes the mother of all problems. Because the contraction in the mind is echoed within the consciousness of every cell of the body. So you can imagine that if your liver were having the same conflict, which it does, as my mind, the liver takes this form, same as my mind. It's so contracted, like a fist. And do you think a liver that's shaped like this is going to be able to serve the entire organism to its fullest capacity? The answer has got to be no. But if it's relaxed, and know that it's being loved because I'm eating food every day that loves my liver, that loves my spleen, that loves my eyes and my brain and my joints, instead of eating the food that the ego loves, the senses love, or the unconscious mind loves.
Yes, and the same as feeding your consciousness, feeding your body with things that are healthy and knowing exactly how to do that and what they are. So, and by the way, I just wanted to give you some props on your first book, The Heart and Science of Yoga. It's amazing. The American Meditation Institute's Empowering Self-Care Program for a Happy, Healthy, Joyful Life. That's another book you all should check out. Because it's really helpful in understanding the power of yoga and what you can do for you. Some people write, isn't it exhausting to rely on the conscience all the time? Like you said, well, we can't. I mean, we try, but the more we practice some of your practices that you suggest, the more it just becomes sort of automatic.
That's right. We all remember when we were 15 or 16 and we learned to drive an automobile, and gosh, it was harrowing. You know, how much would I turn the wheel one way or the other way?
Right.
How am I going to stop this automobile without jerking back and forth?
Yeah.
Now there's just driving because we have a global skill. It's the same thing. It's a new way of being in the world.
Right. Yeah, it really is. Getting back on a bicycle again, it's just sort of the more you do it, you just remember. That's you can right. just and you know what I have found is that there's certain types of meditations that I do every day, and I had to find the right vibe for me, the right formula, what works for me to get into that state. And once you get it, once you feel it, you crave it. It's almost like, oh God, I have. It's like the craving for something you really love. You know, to
you know, Once we learn how to meditate, we gain four critically important skills. One is one-pointed attention. Yes. One-pointed attention always leads to genius. And that one-pointed attention then creates a space between stimulus and response. Mm-hmm. And in the space between stimulus and response lies our freedom,
yeah,
to choose what's to be done and what's not to be done. That right. provides me the freedom and the time to check with my conscience and convince the ego, senses, and unconscious mind
right.
to support that superconscious wisdom reflected by the conscience.
Right.
And also, because I can now do what's to be done and not do what's not to be done, oh, I build the muscles of willpower. Mm-hmm. So my meditation provides me one-pointed attention, detachment, wisdom and discrimination from the conscience, and the muscles of willpower.
Right.
And those tools I use all day long.
Beautiful.
So all day long, I am meditating in action.
Beautiful. I love that. The one-pointed attention. I love that concept. Beautiful. Can we do a little experiment
sure.
to easy example of how we might try to get in touch with our higher conscience? Maybe something we could do now before we have to wrap up?
Sure.
Okay.
Okay. So let's say we just had a wonderful dinner. And the question before us all is, are we going to brush our teeth? Well, what's to be done and what's not to be done? In such a circumstance, in such an experiment, I invite and I make an appointment with the ego, the senses, the unconscious mind, and the conscience. And we all sit around the kitchen table. And I play the role of the parent. Mm-hmm. I'm sort of the moderator. So I say to the ego, the question is, are we going to brush our teeth? Or are we not going to brush our teeth? What is your opinion from this limited perspective that you have? And what does the ego say? I don't think it's very pleasant and I'm against it. Okay, well, thank you.
Right.
Thank you very much. Senses? Senses? What do you think? Well, if I'm really honest, I had a wonderful dinner with everybody, especially the dessert. I love apple pie, and apple pie was served for dessert. So insofar as the brushing of the teeth, I'm against it because I would prefer to have a second slice of apple pie.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you, senses.
All right.
that's a perspective. Thank you. And now unconscious, what do you say? Oh, my habits dictate that I go along with the ego and the senses. Okay, well, thank each of you. Now, let's all sit quietly as we listen to the conscience, who is going to reflect wisdom from the superconscious mind and share it with us. Conscience, you have the floor now. So the conscience says something to the effect, this life that we're living, it's not a sprint. It's a marathon. And for this marathon of life, we need healthy teeth. We need healthy gums. We need a healthy and strong immune system. And taking a time out for 2 minutes to brush our teeth will go a long way towards supporting our teeth and our gums and our immune system. So let's just walk over to the bathroom. It'll only take 2 minutes. It's a small little change that we're asking. And let's do an experiment. And everybody walks over to the bathroom. We brush the teeth. Then we come back to the kitchen table. And as the parent, I go around again. Ego, what did you experience? Well, it wasn't as bad as I feared. And I'm still here. I didn't die. Okay, thank you. Senses, what do you say? I was shocked, the senses say. Because when the tongue glides over my teeth now, after having brushed the teeth, I don't feel that mossiness. on my teeth that I really don't like at all. So I think it was good. It was pleasant. Unconscious mind, what do you say? Wasn't so bad. So we have given the ego, the senses, and the unconscious mind a relatively easy experiment.
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. Beautiful.
And several things happen.
Yeah.
They trust me.
Yes.
They trust me, and they trust their own personal experience of pleasure.
Right.
Where
exactly.
Previously, they thought yes. It might be the end of reality as I knew.
Right. I love that analogy. Oh, that's really cool. Well, we're coming up to a hard break, and thank you so much for sharing that, and also your wonderful book that you're sharing with us. It's your conscience, the key to unlock limitless wisdom and creativity and solve all of life's challenge. Read it. Get into your own practice. Leonard Perlmutter is an amazing teacher, and he will change your life. Believe me, folks. Thank you so much for being here. Lovely to meet you online. All right, guys. Take care of yourselves, and I'll be back next Tuesday. And then you'll be great for others, and that's the way it works. Have a good day. Bye-bye now.
You're listening to On the Couch with Dr. Michelle, right here on LA Talk Radio.